Thank you. Well, greetings again. Good to be here. How's your week been? Good. All right. Facing your giants. You have any giants come this week in your life? Anything that you thought was beyond your control? Yeah, I think we all have that, something like that going on. Something that's larger than us. You know, it might be something that we're striving to conquer. We're in a battle. It might be something similar, like thorns may be a word for giants, that some thorns come up that's just irritating us. We tend to worry about things, maybe. We're worried about failure, maybe our health, finances, family problems, you know, maybe fear of death. A lot of people went to a lot of funerals the last month. You know, the future, a lot of things that they're giants, you know, once we confronted with them. You know, how do we face them? And we're going to look at some of these in maybe a little bit of abstract way. But this morning there's a chapter I'd like to read about tells how Jesus made it easier to understand. He used what? Parables. And in Matthew 13, it talks here of one of the parables here. Getting Jesus' message, how to make us common people understand what he wanted us to learn. He used simple logics of things, you know, parables. And so he had to speak in a way that we understood. And let me read some of this in Matthew 13, the parable of the sower there. On the same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the sea, and great multitudes were gathered with him, so that he got into his boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And he spoke to many of them in many things to them in parables, saying, and he went on about the sower there, that some fell on stony ground, some on fertile and just, you know, places that didn't have much vitality to them to spring up. They had no depth of earth. 6. And then when the sun was up, they were scorched because they had no root. They withered away. Some fell among thorns and others sprang up. Thorns sprang up and choked them. 8. And others fell on good ground and yielded a crop. Some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. So as disciples were listening to this here, okay, what's he talking about here? And the disciples in 10 there came to him and said, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered him, "Because it has been given to you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has been not been given." And it goes on many other things, so that the purpose of parables is to help us understand things better and to learn to face the things that come before us. And I'm going to use a little parable this morning, comparison to the game of golf. And I, as you know, I enjoy playing golf, and I'm not the best golfer. I'm very mediocre, but I enjoy it. And that's one thing about golf, you don't have to be the best to enjoy it. And if you're real bad, you probably won't go again. But that's someone thought I had a body bag here, but it's not a body bag. Let me get this out here. And okay, so we got a set of golf clubs here.
connect it to the bag.
Okay. Behave and stand up there. So we'll use this a little bit of an illustration this morning and see if we can use this as a parable of how that relating golf to the Christian life, to facing our giants. You know, okay, what does that have to do with the facing our giants golf? Unless if you're a golfer, you realize that it is a lot of giants you come across out there. And most of the time, you know, it's ourselves that we're battling, and that's what it is. We have to play with ourselves in our mind to be able to conquer that there. And so many things it illustrates the same to our everyday walk of life, our everyday battles that we face. Is that way. A couple of things I'm going to look at here today is the C's, the four C's what I'm going to look at today. Of course, concerns, caddy, and card. And it's interesting that card, the last one we'll talk about, fits very well with Ricky's favorite song there. They talked about there, our book of life, having our name written in the book of life. So we'll go finish up with that there. It's very good with that there. Let's look at first the golfer's course. You know, what is a course? And, a golf course is a laid out in a prescribed way. It has its different greens, fairways. It's all laid out perfectly with that there. A golf course is most commonly called a layout. Someone has to lay it out. You have to have an architect, designer of that there. And it's built on natural terrain. Tons of dirts are moved. Trees are planted. Lakes are made. Creeks are rerouted to suit the architect's desires. And when it's completed, it consists of valleys, dog legs, blind shops, traps, water, hazard trees, and all this stuff it has. And one example of that is close by. We have a course in Augusta called Augusta National. Very interesting to realize how that started out with. It was back in the 1800s, and arborist, botanist, whatever. He was a gardener, a very well-known gardener, came from Europe. And he made a very landscape shop, basically, on there. 365 acres, beautiful grounds. And then one important golfer came in and seen it and said, you know, that would be a great layout for a golf course. And that designed it. So when you go today and hear about that, it started out with a natural. Someone planned it that way. That's kind of like, our life, you know, with God is the same way. You know, we think something just happened, be not really there. It's planned. God planned our life out, and He designed it. We think, oh no, you know, I'm just here. You know, no, God planned your life out, and the verse for that there. It says in Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the thoughts and plans that I have for you." The one who laid out the universe is the one laying out my life and your life. And talks about that in the Old Testament way back. That He has planned all this. And He will be able to help you along this pathway. That we're on, this course that we're on too. Let's look about the golfer's choice. You know, I haven't played a lot of golf in my younger years, but I remember that you have to play by the rules. And very important to do that. And you have to do certain things, you have to have a certain amount of clubs. You're supposed to have how many clubs you're supposed to have in there, Tim? You carry too many. 14. You got to have 14. You got to have certain. If you have over that, you'll be disqualified. You know, we're not that precise with it, but on the professionals, you there, you don't have over 14. You have less than that. And there's lots of rules like that. It's, you know, don't ground your club a certain way. You hold your club a certain way with that. Anyway, when I started out, the first time I was on a golf course wasn't the most pleasant time, but I'll tell you that story. I don't, not too many people know it, but I know you won't tell anybody. My grandchildren, you won't tell them. But anyway, I was like 11, 12 years old. And how old are you, Landon?
13.
You're 13. I was a little bit younger than you, maybe. And we had come home from the school bus and driving home, and then lived up a long road. And Ed Hirschberger, called him Edward back then, said, let's go to the golf course this afternoon. So, okay. So I hopped on my bike and rode up to his about a mile away, and then we drove another 2 miles up the road and went up to the golf course, and we was going to get golf balls. And that was my first experience on a course, and so we went there, and we started getting golf balls. Just go in the water. The water was probably about up to our waist. You feel them down there and reach down. We had water going every. I better stay here. Thing here. I don't have a lapel on me here. We were just loading up. We're getting them everywhere. And the guys would come by, the golfers come by, we'd put them up on the banks, they'd pick them out, they'd give us a quarter piece for them, and they were happy, and we were happy, and all of a sudden, you know, our pants were full of them, and we're all muddy. One of them came bouncing back over there and said, "Y'all better get out of here, Sparrow's coming." And, we hurry up and got off. And tried to get out of there, and Sparrow was a off-duty cop, and he had this side job of patrolling the golf course there. He was not a very well liked, like a sheriff deputy around the area there, and had a kind of a bad reputation anyway. So we hurry up and try getting out of there, and then got heading towards the woods, all loaded down, and we seen him coming across the car. This was probably 65, 64, somewhere in there. So you had an old car, probably like a 59 car back in then. So that's way back for y'all. And, but anyway, seeing him come bouncing through there, he come flying up to us. We was ready in the woods, whatever. He had jumped out, started hollering, "Stop, stop!" And, you know, and I kept on running, and I told Ed, come on, get it out of here. He said, "No, we could just have to go through the woods." And he was an oversized old man, and we could outrun him in a minute. And I said, "Come on, let's go, let's get." And he, no, "We got to stop." He said, "Stop." "No, come on." Finally, he stopped, and so I had to stop. And then he come and took us in up to the clubhouse. We had to dump all our balls out on the floor there, and very humiliating, and lost all our balls that we worked hard for. And then they ended up calling the local youth detention officer, and so we waited there, and he came and took us, and big police car with the light on it and whatever, took us home. Dropped Ed off. I don't remember dropping him off there, but I do remember coming into our driveway. It was late past milking time, and I was supposed to be there to help milk, and we worked hard back in them days. Anyway, Dad was ready to start. He was ready milking, and a patrol car came driving up there, and the detention officer, he went in and got Dad and talked to him a little bit and come out. And I remember his parlor had an entrance, was about like size of this here, elevated a little bit, and patrol car was out there. I felt so little in the back seat of that patrol car, and just humility of that. And then seeing them come out and Dad looking down at me, and oh my, that was terrible feeling. And then, but anyway, it wasn't too bad because Dad knew this guy, so I think they were talking about politics or something. I don't know what they were talking about, but yeah, it. I can't remember anything after that, so it wasn't a real bad deal. But that was my first chance of getting to a golf course, so it wasn't the best experience in that there. So you know, so that's part of playing by the rules there. You know, don't go trespassing on a golf course. You'll get in trouble for it. And also, you know, the Christian life is that way too, about the rules and things there. We have rules, and that our rule book is the Bible, is the Word of God. You know, you don't take shortcuts. You don't take chances in life. You just don't do a lot of things like we know we should, because the Word of God says it. It's plain there. And if we're out playing golf and we try to take shortcuts and, I'll just go through the woods here. It's easier that way. You'll get in trouble, and people won't enjoy playing with you. And same thing in life, in the church is that way. You know, you just, certain rules you just don't do. And to have respect for another. A true golfer needs to stay out of the traps, right? That's your goal. When you're teeing off somewhere, you try to stay out of the traps, you know, the obscure places. And that's the way life is as well. Stay out of traps where water's in there, and all this here, just ask some of the people in the Old Testament or the Bible about that. What about Samson? You know, he fell in some of these traps. And youth, and that there, stay out of the traps. When we're younger, we can probably succeed a whole lot easier than that. Some of the other people in the faith home and the haven of rest, drug addicts and things, they're just full of people that are just wishing, oh, I wish I'd have stayed out of these traps there. There's so many traps there that trap us, you know, obsession with, you know, power and money and pornography and desire for many things, wild parties and all this here. They're traps. And stay out of them, and stay clean of that there, and it makes the end of the day a lot more enjoyable. We get to the end of the course, we stay out of the traps. It makes it an enjoyable day, and when we get caught into that there, it'll knock us down. One quote here I seen that made me think a little bit, but I think it is true. So one thing for sure is anything that takes us away from God is a trap. You know, think it through a little bit. What's something that takes us away from God, maybe in your life, that is taking you away from God? You're spending more time on it than what you should. It's a trap. No matter what it is, it can be these here, that there. We're spending too much time with that for the hobbies and things. It's a trap that we can get our focus off of God with that there. Another thing is that golfers have to worry about is out of bounds. You know, the course is laid off in a certain way, and there might be some houses over there, and they have white stakes through there, and that's the white stakes. I mean, they're out. If you go in that area, you're out of bounds, and you can't get there with that. You can get there and get the ball, but it's a penalty. There's a penalty of that when we go out of bounds with that there. And so many people have found that. Like Balaam was one of that them in the Old Testament. He went out of bounds and he suffered for it very dearly from that there, his whole delegation there. And he died on a foreign battlefield. And that he was sternly denounced in the Bible. What about, you know, David? David was one that went out of bounds. He had his desires going the wrong direction, and he fell in with trouble with Bathsheba, and also he was considered to be a man of war. He fought battles, and then God told him, since you went out of bounds, you cannot build a temple. You will pay a penalty for this here. And Judas was another one. He went out of bounds. You don't do that. You stay where you're supposed to be in life. And then these traps and things, they don't come into play for you. You bypass them. And they're there for other people. You don't want to even worry about them with that. You know, another thing a golfer does, you know, he has to, you know, watch his grips. You know, where the grips on a driver are there for something. And you can, life is that way. When we're gripping that, we grip it too tight, you know, we're going to have trouble. We're going to have trouble when we do that. When we grip it too loose, guess what? We won't control it. It'll go flying there. And that's what life is the same way. We have to grip it with a proper grip. You know, have a mediocre grip. It works good with that. And we get so intense with our life that and we can't even focus. We're gripped on it too tight. It causes problems. And then that's where we have to maintain a proper grip on life with that there, and it'll do us much better that way. It's a verse there, it talks in 2 Timothy, you know, he said, I lay hold on eternal life. You know, don't take life for granted. And all of these clubs that have a certain function in that too. There, with some clubs you treat different than others. You know, I look in these clubs here. You know, I thought about this morning. Was sitting in before I got up here. This bag here is. You take all the clubs out of this bag. What have you got? Just a bag, nothing, no value to it. Isn't that just like the church house here? When we're, say on Tuesday morning, there's no one here in the church. The church is, when we're gone, when we're gone to heaven, glory, and if the building is still here, what good is it? Your church is no good without people in it, you and I. Same thing, each of these clubs. This is part of that structure there with that. Each one of us here has a purpose to make this church function, to make it look good, whatever. A driver like this here has a function. It has a one purpose in it. It's to make, what's that saying, you drive for show and you putt for what? Dough. Yeah, the golfers know that there. And all of them have a function here with that. You go through all of them. They have the mid-range clubs in between. They have a function. Then you get up close to green and you go into a sand trap. It takes a special club to get out of there. And like the church is kind of that way. Each of us have our special. You have your ministers and the people up front here. They're more of the driver type, you know. Up here, there. You get other people have special jobs in the church. They perform well under that jobs. And you go all the way through them. It's sand. You can have it shaped like a spoon. You can scoop it out of the sand, put it where you want it, and then you got down to the putter. And there's putters in the church too. We got people that are kind of like a putter. Now you wouldn't want to use a putter on a tee box where you got a long ways to go. Why are you doing that? Same thing. You have some people probably shouldn't be up here. You got the kitchen committee down there with Martha and Elaine and Annie, you know, down there. You probably don't want them up front, but they do a marvelous job down in the kitchen. And they putter around down there. And they have their job to do. Maybe not real showy, but they get the job done. That's what it's all about. At the end of the day, they're helping each other. This whole church here is set up to help each other with that. And we can do that by going into that the areas that we do best at. What is the goal of a golfer? Is to get to the hole, your target, with the least amount of strokes. And that's kind of the same thing in life. We don't want to live a hard life where we go out of bounds, back and forth. You run here, run, get in the water, get in the sand, you know, have problems. And like the first one, all these problems, get sidetracked with things in life. It makes a hard journey to get to the hole. You know, get to the hole in the least amount of strokes possible, whether it's, you know, 3, 4, they've won. Yeah, if you get a hole in one, that's great. Not too many people can do that. I don't think anybody here has ever got one. Tim, you got one? Okay. Yeah, all right, Tim got one, hole in one. All right, I never got one. I witnessed 3 of them already, but.
No, putt-putt.
No, putt-putt? Okay. Yeah, true golfer and putt-putt. Okay, whatever. Anyway, I watched, one of them was Walter Miller. That brought your eyes up there. I seen Walter hit one, and I was also along when, Ben's brother John hit one, hole in one. So I got to see both their family members hit one, and, maybe my time will come one time. What happened to you, Ben? You ain't gonna get one, all right. And, get to the least amount of strokes possible. You know, don't plan for, you know, I'll live my life, rough when I'm younger. I'll do all this here, then when I get old, I'll do that. No, it don't work that way. You know, stay on target, stay on track with the best you can do. You know, you have a lot of things you have to deal with. Deal with the wind. And, the wind, you know, it affects us. You know, and the wind is kind of like, a lot of things that we come in life. There's, people that tell you, try this, try that. You know, let's go here. You know, it won't hurt you. Stay focused. When the wind comes and try to blow us off course, get back on course. Watch it. And, you know, the wind is not a bad thing. You just know how to play it properly with that. And, it seems like we as Christian, we always have wind kind of blowing at us in our face, whatever there. Talks about, the Apostle Paul warned the Ephesians about being tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine. You know, we too must test the wind. We have to, check it and see what a golfer he'll take and throw, get up to the tee box, get us some grass and throw it up in the air and see which way it's blowing so he can adjust his course. And, that's, what we have to do there. And, you know, line it up properly with that. One other thing I'd like to talk about, is the golfer's caddy. I know we don't play too much with caddies in our level of game because we're the poor golfers. But you get into the nice courses, then they require a caddy, and a caddy is someone that really is important when you are playing like this. See, when I was in Thailand, 2002, maybe 18 years ago, we went over there. One another missionary was over there, took me to a course, and there you had required to be a caddy. You had to pay for a caddy. Anyway, and this was a young girl, and she was good, and a caddy will walk beside you. They'll coach you along life's way. They'll help you. Okay, you don't want to hit it over here because of this, over that. And it took me quite a few holes before I realized what she was doing. You get up on the green, and she knew exactly the layout of everything. She would go up to my ball and mark it, and she would move the letters to a certain way. And, why is she doing that? And she wouldn't tell me. And then finally it caught on. If I followed her instructions with those letters, maybe the hole was right here, and I was back here, and she'd line up the letters here. If I would hit the ball straight for the letters on the ball, the heel would curve it over to the hole. She knew that, the layout of the land. And if I followed her instructions, I did well. But I don't believe you. I'm gonna go just a little bit this way. And guess what? The ball would end up over here. And that so much of that way is the same way that with a caddy is, we can liken to who in our life, in the Christian life. Who is our caddy in our Christian life, our walk? Holy Spirit is, right? The Holy Spirit is someone that walks beside us and guides us and directs us. And so often we do what? We don't believe what the little small voice that's speaking to us. We don't believe that. We say, we're going to try it my way. And, that doesn't work out. You know, a good caddy will walk beside you and stride with us, you know, giving us advice and counseling and inspiring us, you know, encouraging us. Hey, come on, keep up. Keep going. You can do it. I got my trust in you. You're going to get through this. And that's what the comforter will do, that. And one that walks alongside. That's the Greek word for it, is, what's that word, Joel? Parakletos? Parakletos? One that does the word for the Holy Spirit. Is the one that walks beside it, is the meaning of that there. Ones that walks alongside. And it's so important to listen to that Spirit as we go through that there. And when we hit a lot of times we don't listen to the caddy, we don't listen to the things in our life, and say often we just say, you're having a rough time, and you're going through life, and you're just wondering why, and whatever, and just like Prince would say, you're playing with four guys, and your other two partners, the other three partners there, they don't hit their ball up on the green. Par three, they're on the green, and you hit your first ball, bam, it went in the water, and you're so upset with yourself, and you just, oh man, why'd I ever take up this game? And you come in, you hit another one, and that one's in the water. And you go over to the other guys, or just, don't even want to face you, and they're grabbing their clubs and went on. You grab your clubs, and you're up there, you're still mad and pouting, and you just, I hate this game, and just go, yeah, I'm tired of it. I hate this life, We throw in the towel. And so often we do that, and that's my second set of clubs. I wouldn't treat my good clubs that way. And then we make mistakes like that. We fly off the handle, and so many times we do that, and in our. Y'all women can do that, and men can do that, and then after we make a mistake like that, and what do we do? And it's just like Mark. Can I use you and your family as an example? Thank you. Okay. Say Mark would be coming home. Well, no, Becky would having all the youngins there, having a rough day. All the youngins fighting and screaming and trying to clean up and make supper, and she just fit to be tied, and Mark comes home and bouncing in like he does, grabs, you don't grab a newspaper anymore, probably his device, sits on the chair and, you know, sits there 15 minutes and all of a sudden, gets out his bell and whatever, dinner bell. Hey, Becky, got supper ready coming here? By that time, the beans and rice come flying through the door and all across towards him and say, here's your supper. And, you know, we get times like that. I know that didn't ever happen to y'all, but I think it wasn't Barbara had confessed that the Sunday here about having a fly off with that there. So, you know, we have times like that. And that things will, just discourage us and we fly off. But then meanwhile, my club's still in the water and Becky's beans are still on the floor and looking at there and walking up, and then we want someone to, you know, help us out. So, Abby, all right, come up, pick my clubs up for me, bring them up here for me. Huh? No. Why?
Because you did that.
But, you know, that's what it is. A lot of time we want people to clean our mess. I told her to say that there. She worshiped the ground I walk on. She would have came up a minute if I wouldn't have told her. So I had to tell her not to. But too often we have our, you know, moments like that, and we want someone else to pick them up. Pick up our accidents. No, they're not accidents. There are problems that are reactions. Our reactions. We want someone else to pick our reactions up and take care of them for us. No, it's our responsibility to go down in the water, swim down there, and pick them up. If we don't, we're gonna. That's how we learn from life, is to correcting our mistakes. And if we don't learn from that way, we have everyone else pick up after us, we'll be miserable. That's not the way we learn with that. Okay. One of the areas here we talk about is the golfer's card, the scorecard in golfing. You know, if you want to have enjoyable round, you need to keep track of your scorecard. You have your round, your total hits that you have. You mark it down. Without it, there's no calculation of success or failure of your round. Your scorecard is the report of what we're doing. And as when we go through life, all of us have a scorecard. Our scorecard is telling where we've been, what we're doing, and it's a must that we have. You know, I talked about the professional golfers. It's very important for them. They have to be accurate. You know, it's not fair how strict they are with that. And, you know, I'm glad that life is not as strict as a golfer's scorecard must be. And when they get done with their round, a professional golfer, they have to walk up with their card, walk up to a building or a tent, and they have to, in front of the official, sign their name. This is a true and accurate report of my round of golf I did with that. And it's a major, like a test there. And people have, you know, lost tournaments by having one digit wrong in there, a one for a two and vice versa. And it's very important to be honest in that. They watch each other very closely. And that's really how true it is when we come to the end of life's pathway there. Let's talk here in Hebrews 4:13. It's true now, and it will even much more true in the day when our card is pulled. You know, we're going to have a card that's going to be pulled one day when we get to glory, to the great white throne. You know, our card is going to be pulled, and it's a story of our round, of our time here on earth. It's a story of that, and you know, Christ knows all of that, what it is with that. All things are open and exposed, and you know, we're defenseless. Because when we look at a card, you know, if we look at keep our card for year after year, we look back and we shake our heads and you know, why? But it's there. It's history. It's right there. It's what we did. Whatever we post there is there. And, you know, it's a few of us today maybe are here that you're not sure about your scorecard with that there. And you say, you know, my scorecard doesn't look too good. But one great thing, you know, Jesus, that comforter, the caddy that we have, Jesus can wipe away a bad scorecard. None of us have an excellent scorecard. Perfect. We're not perfect. But we have a mediator that's going to walk with us. And he's going to, he's able to wipe away all of our giants in our life that come there. And he's able to cleanse us from all sin with that. I'm going to read one closing prayer yet that here, this book here, Goffer's very favorite book of mine, was given to me by Heather and Sherilyn. It says, date June, Father's Day. And it's been many years ago they gave it. And if you ever give gifts like this, write the date down, the year. You might think it doesn't mean anything now, but when you get older, you like dates. And with that there. So very good book here with that. I'm going to read this prayer here at the closing with that. And that's for you as well, and all of us here. Lord, when my path gets difficult and the challenges seem more than I can bear, help me see the beauty of where I am. The joy of realizing how blessed I am is my encouragement. Remind me that occasionally I need to step back, take a deep breath, and perhaps just stop for a moment and realize where I am because of your love for me. The beauty I see on the golf course is a reminder of your majesty and power. Help me to remember that the God who created this venue is the same God who created a new heart in me. As I consider the beauty of my surroundings, may I come to understand even more how much you care for me. And that's my prayer, is that you realize that, you know, as we serve God, he's a great architect of this earth, and one day he is coming back for us with that there. Thank you.